You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Well, welcome at a very special time of year, MLB.com Extras. This is special edition NLCS preview. I'm Dave Brandman. We sit down with Kerry Muscat today, and we talk Cubs baseball. And Kerry, I don't know if there's anything better, really, than teams like the Cubs, the Mets, the Royals, and we'll just go ahead and throw the Blue Jays in there. These are fun franchises, a lot of historical significance to them being at this position in the postseason. And, of course, that is never greater than with the Chicago Cubs. This has to be kind of a thrilling time.
Well, it's exciting for the fans. The fans, there was a great buzz at the ballpark for the games for the National League Division Series. And I know when they had the one game where they hit six home runs, it was beyond buzzworthy. The press box was shaking. So I get a little nervous when the team does well because I'm not sure if Wrigley can really survive this, but we'll give it a shot.
It is always a little dicey, I guess, inside Wrigley.
Yeah, you got a 100-year-old ballpark, and you know you got 40,000 plus screaming, and the press park starts to shake, and it's not a real comfortable feeling up there. But that's okay. I can live with it. So
yeah. Well, it's been that kind of year, and this team definitely had a special thing going, and I think you have to get to a championship series. Now they square off against the Mets, and it's interesting because the Mets have a little bit of that similar magic going, a young team that has grown and developed over the years. But the Cubs are 7-0 against the Mets this year. Is that, as a Cubs fan, I don't know, is that good news, bad news? It's hard to beat somebody that soundly every single time you go out against them. You almost feel like there's a statistical thing going on here that one would be worried about.
Well, yes, the Cubs were 7-0, but they were 7-0 against a Mets team that did not have David Wright and that did not have Yoenis Cespedes. And so it's a different Mets team. Also, Noah Syndergaard made his major league debut against the Cubs at Wrigley Field, so he was just getting started. Now look at him now after him coming into pitch and relief in the Game 5 of the NLDS. I mean, and I think they faced the other kid with the hair, Jacob deGrom. They faced him twice. He only went 5 innings in those games. And I think he totaled maybe 8 strikeouts. You know, now that would just be – that's almost like 3 innings for him. So it's a totally different Mets team. And this is a totally different Cubs team in a sense because, you know, the kids at that time of the year were still kind of getting their footing, were still trying to figure out big league routine and big league life. And so it's really kind of an interesting to me. It just kind of showcases all the great young talent that Major League Baseball has. I mean, these two franchises really represent it well, and it's going to be a lot of fun just to see the kids on display.
I agree. And to your point about these teams being very different from when they faced one another earlier this year, and everybody loves to point out all those changes and differences in the Mets, but it's not like Kyle Schwarber was hitting home runs in those 7 games against the Mets either, right? And, I mean, he's a
correct
big factor. Unfortunately, Addison Russell will not be playing in this series at all?
No. Russell hurt his hamstring. He felt it grab a little bit when he hit a triple in the Game 3 of the NLDS. So he came out, which is good. And rather than rush him and risk a serious injury with him, you know, kind of trying to come back too soon, they figured they'd rather just wait, just let him take his time, rehab, do it right, and then if they advance to the next round, he might be available there. Now, the good thing is that the Cubs, you know, fans, I remember it wasn't that long ago, you know, fans were clamoring that the Cubs had too many shortstops. Now they have just enough because Javier Baez is going to slide into shortstop and he will start in the NLCS, and then they'll keep Starlin Castro at second base because he seems to really be thriving there. And the rest of they've got Tommy La Stella as a backup if necessary, but I don't foresee that happening. And we'll just sort of see what happens.
Right, that depth now is going to be critical for them. What about this? You know, they clinch on Tuesday. They party, you know, have a great time as they are wont to do. Game 1 isn't until Saturday. On the one hand, you got a little time to shake off all the partying and set up your pitching and get everybody ready, some much-needed rest. On the other hand, I know there are people in baseball who are particularly addicted to the routine and sometimes find falling out of that routine a little disruptive. Where do you come down?
Well, in talking to the players, a lot of them are that, you know, the wild card game was exhausting, and so was the NLDS just because they were facing the Cardinals. I mean, if you look at it, they've had to beat the teams with the two best records in baseball to get this far. And they're the wild card team. They're not getting home field advantage. So really, they kind of needed a day on Wednesday to regroup. Apparently, a lot of the players got together Wednesday evening, just sort of a little team gathering. And then Thursday, they had a workout at Wrigley. So I don't really foresee any rust. I mean, it hasn't been that long. They're going to work out Friday at Citi Field, and then the game will be on Saturday. And one of the things all the players have said is, you know, the key to them is just stick with the same routine. And as long as they maintain that, they'll be fine.
Okay. So what as you handicap the series then, what do you
I don't like to do this, Dave. Okay, go ahead.
we look at the pitching matchups, and the Mets dazzled. They're pitching, they're starting pitching has been so impressive, and you know the radar readouts, everything grab everybody's attention. I mean, it's excellent pitching. Cubs have been mashing the ball, but when you look at the way these two teams stack up, let's say breaking it down piece by piece, where do you see advantages or for that matter disadvantages for the Cubs?
Well, the Cubs do like to hit fastballs, but they also strike out a lot, so that could be a little bit to the Mets' advantage right there. Or a disadvantage, you know, depending on the mix of pitches. For example, you know, watching DeGrom and Syndergaard in Game 5, I didn't realize the kids had that many types of pitches and that they weren't just throwing 100 miles an hour. So that could mix them up. I just think it's going to be, you know, what Joe Maddon keeps stressing to us is that it's going to come down to pitching and defense, which it usually always does. And it's just the Cubs have to catch the ball. And sometimes I worry, you know, with Schwarber in left field, he is a catcher by preference. He would prefer to be behind the plate. He's out there in left field. That might be a little risky. They do sub for him late in game. Jorge Soler, you can't get the guy out. So, I mean, he'll be in right field, but they also sub for him defensively. So I'm just kind of, to me, as cliche as it sounds, whoever makes the fewest mistakes could probably win the game.
Okay.
I know that's cliche. I'm sorry.
No, I think that's fair, right? I mean, I think that's a pretty fair. Anyway, and we saw it in the American League Division Series with
the Rangers. Yeah.
I mean, it's critical.
Right.
The Back to the Future thing, I'm sure you've dug into that.
I have not seen any DeLoreans around Wrigley lately, but yeah.
Is that crazy or what, though?
I don't know. I never saw the movie. I wasn't a big fan of the movie. I shouldn't say that on record, but anyways, there's that. We have our own little future shows with the kids and Schwarber's home run up there in the scoreboard, and I mean these guys got their own little urban legends developing here, so.
Fair enough, and very true. I don't know that we have even uttered the name Joe Maddon yet, and we're almost 10 minutes into this thing. What wisdom or what unique plans, strategies, or just sort of deflecting items has he come up with in these last couple of days to keep this team loose and distracted from the various pressures?
Well, the last time the Cubs were in New York, which was in May, and they swept that series, he brought in a magician because they were going through a long losing streak. Now, I've asked around, and there's no plans to bring the magician back. So I know that that's not really one of his options. Really, it was interesting during the workout on Thursday, he had some guys working on their bunting again. And if you remember in one of the NLDS games, and right now my brain's a little fried, I can't remember which one, but they scored two runs on sack bunts. So the fact that they were actually working on their bunting on Thursday was interesting to me because we might see that more in the NLCS. As Joe likes to say, a lot of times it's the little things that can really make a difference here. And so just if Kyle Schwarber is being asked to bunt during BP, I'll be real curious to see if he's asked to bunt during a game.
Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to the point you were making earlier about minimizing mistakes, errors. It is true. I mean, one base, right? One link in that
yes.
round could make all the difference in the world. All right. So last sort of real challenging question for you, Kerry, is if you had to pick that person out who is going to be the difference maker, right? And not the headline guys that we expect. Who's that bench player, that bullpen arm, that bit roll guy who's going to deliver the big moment in this series for the Cubs?
Oh, that's tough. I don't know if he qualifies in your description. I think Starlin Castro, the second baseman, the shortstop now second baseman, I think he might do some special things here. I'm not sure why. Just a nice confidence in talking to him. And I think that the postseason so far has really been a boost for his attitude and his confidence. And shoot, the guy's gone from a three-time All-Star short to moving over to second and hasn't complained, hasn't pouted, and has actually played really, really well. And anybody who's at Wrigley, when he's coming up to his walk-up song and who is not clapping should be shocked, because it's one of the most fun moments at Wrigley during this last season. It's a Latin song. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the title. But as soon as he comes up, everybody, and if you're at the game and if you're watching on TV, I'm talking everybody from the guys in the bullpen to the guys in the dugout. They're all clapping along with it and dancing. C.J. Edwards is not even on the roster, and he's dancing and kicking his feet up, and it's really a lively little moment. And Castro really likes it. He says it gets him going. So I'm kind of counting on that.
Plenty of energy and excitement in Chicago over this NLCS. And as the Mets, the other team that has made it in as well, we check in with Anthony DeColmo. Your opinion of the way the Mets took care of business in L.A. to get to this championship series?
It was a heck of an effort. I mean, they knew going in that almost certainly they were going to have to face Clayton Kershaw twice and Zach Greinke twice in the series, which is exactly what happened. And, if that's the case, you got to beat that combination at least two times, and maybe you get a win against Fred Anderson in the other game. So that's what they were looking at going in, and it's a tall task regardless of what issues the Dodgers might have had. When you're facing pitchers of that caliber, we really didn't know how the Mets were going to respond because they hadn't faced too many pitchers of that ilk coming down the stretch. They had an easy schedule coming down the stretch. There was no certainty that they would be able to hit these guys. And not that they knocked them around the ballpark or tattooed them or anything like that, but they certainly came through. Daniel Murphy was the poster child for all of it. He hit three home runs off Kershaw and Greinke in the series. So really, they showed the resiliency. They showed what they're all about, and they showed that they can compete with anybody. Now it's going to be interesting going into a series against the Cubs, who they were 0-7 against during the season, but all seven of those games came before this team really gelled into what it is now. It came before the Cespedes trade. It came before all the trades they made. And so, you can throw the history out the window. This is going to be a fun series. It should be a good competitive series, and we'll see how it goes. The Mets are definitely on a high right now coming off that win in L.A.
It's funny you mentioned the seven games with the Cubs earlier this year. A lot of people have focused on the fact that all seven were won by the Cubs. You point out, though, that was pre-Cespedes. David Wright was injured. And, I mean, let's face it, some of the pitching has come a long way and matured quite a bit since then as well. Cubs have made some moves, too. They've tweaked things just a little bit. Kyle Schwarber wasn't a part of those seven games back in the day. But how different really is this team? I mean, as I watch them now, I see these young pitchers lighten up the radar gun, and it's phenomenal. I mean, it's kind of awe-inspiring what they're able to do. have they matured that much in this, you know, in the span of a couple of months? Are they really that different a team?
I mean, it's night and day how different they are. And I'll touch on the pitching briefly because you mentioned it. I mean, you look at a guy like Noah Syndergaard, for example, has always had fantastic stuff throughout his rookie season, maybe some of the best stuff in baseball. He looks just so much more confident, so much more poised, to the point where if you're Terry Collins, you trust this guy implicitly now, where you might not have back in May when the Mets were playing the Cubs the first time and he was fresh up from the minors. You know, Jacob DeGrom, a lot of players in the clubhouse last night said Jacob DeGrom's performance in Game 5 against the Dodgers was far more impressive than what he did in Game 1 when he set a Mets franchise postseason strikeout record, because he faced a lot of adversity last night. He did not have his good stuff. He certainly did not have his good command, and he battled through it. So just getting these guys, these pitchers, a little battle-tested makes them that much more fearsome in the playoffs, and I think if you're the Mets, you have a lot more confidence in these guys. But the real difference is on offense. You know, when the Cubs last saw the Mets, this was a historically bad Mets offense. They were challenging the 1962 Mets for ineptitude at the plate, really. They couldn't hit. They couldn't score runs. They couldn't hit with power. Nothing they were doing was working, and they were putting out lineups, frankly, of some players that probably didn't belong in the major leagues. They've done a total 180, and it hasn't just been Cespedes. It's been, like you said, getting David Wright back. It's been Travis d'Arnaud coming back from the disabled list and being healthy and hitting. It's been so many of these guys who have gotten the job done for them that you really, if you're the Cubs and you're scouting this series and you're in the video room, it's unrecognizable. This Mets team was the worst in baseball. Batting average, on-base percentage, slugging, you name it, right up until July 25th, which is the day that Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe made their debuts for the Mets. And since that time, the Mets have been the best offense in the National League, better than the Cubs, better than anyone. So it's just, you really can't compare it. It's a totally different team. It's like, you know, looking at some of those minor league seasons where they divided into first half champion and second half champion. I mean, the Mets were the second half champion of the National League. And, you know, you can, like I said, you can throw all that stuff out the window, what happened when the Mets and Cubs met the first time. And I'm not saying the Mets are going to win, but it's going to look different. It's going to look much different out on the field than what you saw back in May and June.
Yeah, no, there's no question. The offense, profoundly different, averaging better than 5 runs a game in the second half, even though, you know, that really hasn't been, you know, the focus, I guess, or the highlight of this postseason yet, right? I mean, they've done it with some incredible pitching, and I think your point about DeGrom in the clincher and not having his great command, but yet still being able to get through that lineup several times and pitch his way through it shows some of that maturity. The name's come up now a couple of times. Anthony, you've said Daniel Murphy's name at least twice. We would be remiss if we didn't discuss just a little bit his performance to this point. Phenomenal. I mean, really almost hard to put into words just how valuable he was in that series.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think over the last 8 years, which is how long Daniel Murphy has been around, he's one of the most underrated players in Mets history. And, you know, I've contributed just like everyone else. When Daniel Murphy first came up in 2008, I think most people had barely heard of the guy. And then along the line, he just developed this reputation. He didn't have a defensive position. He was bad defensively. He tried second base. He wasn't a second baseman, but he ultimately stuck there. You know, he's made so many base running errors over the years, so many things that make you scratch your head and question his value. The one thing he's always done is hit. And he's been remarkably consistent. He's stayed remarkably healthy. He's been the one guy through all the down years that the Mets could count on for that 280 to 300 batting average. He's always in, you know, the low double-digit homers around that area. He'll steal some bases and so on and so forth. But it was funny about, you know, he had those home runs. He had a big home run off Greinke last night. He had 2 home runs off Clayton Kershaw. But it's funny that I really think his biggest contribution was that stolen base against the defensive shift. Just a heads-up play when Zach Greinke and Corey Seager and whoever else weren't really paying attention to him. And, you know, the joke has always been that Daniel Murphy does these funny things on the bases that you almost laugh at because it's like he thinks he's invisible. Well, last night he really was invisible. And that play, if the Mets go on and do something really special here, That play is going to be a huge reason why. That's going to be on all the highlight reels. The Mets, just quite frankly, wouldn't have won this series without Daniel Murphy. And we went into the NLDS looking at Cespedes, looking at David Wright, Lucas Duda, all these guys who you think of when you think of the Mets offense before you think of Daniel Murphy. But it wound up being Murphy who was the most important piece. And, you know, good for him. For a guy who's been through the down years, we've talked so much about David Wright, but Daniel Murphy's been here since 2008, and for him to enjoy the success that he has enjoyed, it's got to be just terrific for him.
Yep, agreed. Really, really cool stuff for him. Who, if you were to pick a guy out who would be a big player in this NLCS, who is not the obvious, right? Not Yoenis Cespedes. You know, kind of a Daniel Murphy emergence on that big stage. Is there a guy, bullpen, bench, you know, like that you would pull out?
You know what, a guy that I always look to for questions like these is Travis d'Arnaud, because he goes so far under the radar with some of these other guys. And really, when this offense has been good, when it's been chugging along, d'Arnaud has quietly gotten lots of big hits. He's got great power. You know, he's going to play every day for the Mets in the playoffs. And really, they missed him so much earlier this year when he was hurt. He's had trouble his entire career staying healthy since he came back from the disabled list in late July. I think that was overlooked amidst all the trades, amidst Lucas Duda getting hot, David Wright coming back. Travis d'Arnaud is a machine offensively for most of the second half of the season. And, you know, if he can come through, especially, you know, the Mets are going to be facing a left-hander in game one. He'll be bumped up in the batting order, probably hitting fifth. If he can come through and give them some good at-bats, it just makes the whole thing deeper, especially with the way Lucas Duda struggled, especially with the way David Wright struggled. And even Cespedes hit a home run in game two of the NLDS, but he struggled for most of the series and looked lost at times at the plate. So I think Travis d'Arnaud is definitely one to keep an eye on. He's not a guy who tends to slump for very long. And I think he could be a difference maker for sure.
Okay, last quick thing for you, Anthony. I know you got a plane to catch. The Cubs have been sitting around since Tuesday. They won. They clinched on Tuesday. They got to wait all the way till Saturday to get going. Mets kind of keep their momentum rolling right into this National League Championship Series. We can obviously point out all the advantages of having a little rest, but is there maybe an advantage to just sort of continuing to chug forward? I mean, you may not get to set up your pitching, and yet Matt Harvey starting game one, they have to feel pretty good, right?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you in a week if there's an advantage or not. You know, obviously the Cubs got to set up their pitching a little more how they'd like it than the Mets did. In a perfect world, if you're the Mets, you have Jacob deGrom start game one, and he's not going to wind up being available until game three. But, you know, that's the benefit of this Mets rotation. They're so deep that, really, your top two options are off the board for game one, and you still have Matt Harvey pitching game one. You're going to have a Matt Harvey who's going to be jacked up. He's going to be ready to pitch. Look, momentum, as the cliche goes, momentum is as good as the next day's starting pitcher. And both teams have great starting pitchers going in game one. Matt Harvey, John Lester. Lester obviously has a ton of playoff experience. He's been through this, but Matt Harvey is eager to prove that all the bad press, all the bad pub that he got in September, he's eager to push that all aside and show that he's committed to this team, that he's committed to pitching, that he's committed to winning. He didn't pitch all that well in his one start in the NLDS. I have a feeling, I know he's going to be jacked up to pitch well in the NLCS. So as far as rest goes, the Cubs being more rested than the Mets and so on and so forth, I'm not sure it really plays a big role. Whoever pitches better in game one is probably going to win that game, and whoever wins game one is going to have a nice leg up on winning the series. So a great pitching matchup, and I'm excited to see how it turns out.
Yeah, no doubt. You and the rest of us, I'll let you go, but I know I already promised that was the last question, but is there one element of either of these two teams you think makes the difference in this series?
You know, what's funny about these, I know this is a cop-out answer, what's funny about these two teams is that really there's no one guy that you can look at and say, well, if he has a great series, this team is going to win. I think if I had to choose one for the Mets, I would point to Cespedes just because he has been, you know, that focal point of their season. He is the guy that you can point to as when their season changed, how it changed. And granted, he hasn't been their best player really since the first week of September. But if he gets hot, he's the one guy who you could look at from the Mets as having the ability to just put the team on his back, take the series in his hands, and almost single-handedly win it. And if you're the Cubs, you probably could say the same thing about Jake Arrieta, who was the best pitcher on planet Earth, really historic numbers in the second half. So that's a matchup I'm going to be eager to see in Game 2 would be Arrieta versus Cespedes. And those are two guys who really, I think, one for each team could single-handedly change the course of the series.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's going to be a lot of fun, man. I hope you have a very pleasant flight home. Enjoy this series, and we'll enjoy reading all about it. Thanks, Anthony.
I appreciate that. It's going to be fun. Take care.
MLB.com Extras, the National League Championship Series preview.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.